Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you can either call them in at area code 646-716-4893, or if you're a little shy to be on the radio, you can call me at email me at bonk@aol.com. I just want to make a few announcements before I introduce my wonderful, fabulous co-hostess for tonight, Suzette Hinton. And first of all, we have our new location for our upcoming healing weekend, and it's going to be in Los Angeles, California. And I'm really excited about it. It's going to be September 20th to 21st. It's going to be right outside the LA airport. And some people will be hanging in there a little longer or ahead of time to go see California. It's a wonderful opportunity to meet some of our wonderful California women who will inspire you with their words of wisdom and their ultimate desire to help others get through this process. And I'm really excited that I have an opportunity to go there. So if you're interested and you'd like to learn more about it, please write to me at bonk@aol.com. I also want to mention that we have our support chats in the evenings now on Thursdays and Sundays. So if you do need support, it's an excellent vehicle to talk to me directly and to talk to some of our other women who can really give you excellent input. Also, we have our Adult Children of Gay Fathers group on Wednesday night. And so there's lots of support available. If you reach out, I'll be there for you. If you'd like to get my newsletters, let me know by emailing me. And I'm very, you know, happy to help you with whatever you need as far as getting information or getting support. And also, I just wanted to re-mention that Dr. Brian Hooper, who was here last week with us, as he is every month, he ends my month, and then I'm so lucky I have Suzette to start my month. But he mentioned that he has his new Facebook page, if you'd like to look at it, Dr. Brian Hooper, and give him a like, because he's trying to build up his numbers on the likes, and we all love Dr. Hooper, so please go to his Facebook page if you're on Facebook. And let's see if there's any other exciting news coming up. Oh, yes, Janine Finelli. Suzette, have you heard her?
No, I haven't.
You two have to meet, because you two are so inspiring to everyone who meets you. Janine's been our guest, you know, a few times, and she came to meet us in Houston. And she's this wonderful, fabulous health coach, and she's just so amazing. She also had a husband who was gay and was in a terrible situation and recently got divorced, or in the process of divorcing. And, you know, she's been separated from him this year, and she's so inspirational. She is a certified health coach. In fact, she studied under Dr. Oz. You know, along with many other nutritionists. And she's launching her radio program this week on Wednesday evening. So I'll have a link up on, you know, several different places. And so if you need information or you'd like to hear Janine, we fell in love with her when we were in Houston. You know, she was just so inspirational. She did a wonderful workshop for feeling better and better health and how it's all tied in with your emotional health and your physical health. And she's like my health guru. And I'm so excited she's going to be doing her shows once a month on Wednesday evenings on Blog Talk Radio. So if anybody needs information, let me know, and I'll send you a direct link to that. I guess that's all the new news from last week to this week. So it's been a month since we've talked, Suzette. How has your month been?
It's been great. It's been busy. Oh, my goodness, just plenty of all these wonderful new changes, and I've been trying to learn from the way he's hitting me how to surf so that I can stay on top of everything, but it's been so exciting. I'm really finding out that when you get in that place where you're supposed to be, you don't have to dig, borrow, or steal. Life will hunt you down to to give you what you're supposed to have.
And that is really so true. And there's such a difference in a lifetime. You know, and it's really funny. I did want to mention this, that Janine Finelli, her saying, and it's imprinted on her hands, is that love is kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so true. And, of course, I always say love doesn't hurt, you know, which is kind of like the same thing, just said in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think of people who are hurting all the time because I get their letters every day, and just, you know, I want to cry when I read some of these letters. They're so sad. And why don't women realize, like you finally did, that, you know, when you get rid of all the mess, your life becomes a better place. It's like cleaning up your house when you're living in a whirlwind of disaster after a tornado or a hurricane. And I think that sometimes women just feel so defeated that they feel they can't move. Do you see that also in your coaching?
I do. I think people, it's like they don't like where they're living. They don't like their lives, but it's familiar. And it becomes harder to clean it up than to just die in it. And that's very sad.
You know, it's really interesting because I guess everybody makes their own adjustments to living. And some, I think, just have the attitude that they accept this is what it is. I have to accept it. This is the way my life is, you know, going to go living on this way, you know, and I can survive in it. So it's not perfect. So I'll just stay where I am. But they never can see that there's such a better world out there. Because I think a lot of times they're beaten down not to think that there is.
That's true.
And
they feel
fearful.
Yeah,
change is fearful, isn't it?
It's very fearful. It's like changing your mind, you know. Sometimes changing your mind can be easy, but it's the walking it out, making the changes in your life, practically walking it out. That's the hard part.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and I think not everybody's ready to change when they have to, right?
It's true. I think, what is it somebody told me? They said, you know, a person can't wake up until their alarm clock goes off. And so a lot of times everybody can see around you how terrible your situation is, but until your own alarm clock goes off, you really can't do anything about it. And it can be so hard for the people who are watching because they want so much better for you. But until your own alarm clock goes off and you say, oh, my God, what am I doing here? you don't have the wherewithal to make the changes that you need to make. Because it has to come from a conviction that your life should be better or it can be better.
Yeah, I just feel so bad because I see that when you're living with somebody, and I call it an abusive situation, because even if it's not physical abuse, a lot of times it's mental abuse, and it just kind of tears you down and peels away at you, and you kind of lose who you are, so that whatever cognitive decision you maybe would have made at one time, you're not even able to think that way. Because you lose your confidence, you feel there's nothing better out there. And how many times do I hear from women, okay, so we don't have sex, but he's my best friend. But is that good enough?
It's almost like,
what did you
get mad for? You know, like I told my ex-husband, I said, you know what, we didn't have to get married to be friends. If we were going to be platonic, we didn't need to be married for that. You know, we could have saved ourselves.
I think that's a really great way. Or how about women who tell me, well, most marriages, the sex fades anyway after 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, they don't
know
some of the people.
What's your response to that?
They don't know some of the people. I know. I tell people they need to change their stuff. Like I told the guy that said, you know, all the guys he played basketball with were complaining about their wives and how terrible marriage was. I told him, I said, maybe you should change your circle. Because in my circle, people are loving it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think the truth in you attracting what you believe. You know, you can attract to yourself what you believe.
Well, I guess that's true, and also the fact that, once again, that fear of change is just easier to sit tight and look around and say, well, you know, nobody else is doing this, nobody else is doing that, and he's my friend. But as you say, you didn't have to marry a friend. If you wanted marriage, you know, you need to do more than just be a friend to somebody, right? That's part of it, but it's not the whole part of it.
I know that it's different in the 21st century, and my son's generation and younger may differ, but when I was growing up, marriage was the thing that made it different. Marriage was the, you know, without marriage, there was no validity to an intimate relationship of that kind. You could be friends with people, whatever, but what made marriage different was the degree of intimacy, the sexuality, the sexual expression to one person. That's what made marriage stand out. It wasn't just, okay, I want to get married because, you know, if I put my money with his money, you know, we can be okay. Or let's get married because, you know what, I have aspirations in ministry and you could really help me out. It wasn't that. It was you were getting with somebody that you wanted to be with in an intimate, exclusive way that you didn't want to be with anybody else. And even though people might say, oh, that's old folks, then tell it all these people getting divorces. Because, I mean, when they get married, they intend to have sex. They intend to, they don't get married so they can stop having it.
That's a good point. And I think that now that you're out there in the world with a wonderful man who is straight, you do understand the concept that straight men want sex, right?
Oh, indeed. I mean, men want sex. You can look at people as old as Hugh Hefner and some of these others. They want sex. They might get it the way they want to get it. Might the body parts may not move as quickly. Or say it's hard and strong. You know, it's a 10 o'clock show, thank goodness I can say hard and strong. But I mean,
that's right.
But they want it. They want it. Yes, the term dirty old man. They want it. Even if they cannot do anything, if you get by their bed, they're going to try their best to fondle that nurse. I mean, they want it.
They do. And, you know, like I said, tell people.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I say this to people because now that I've been doing this for so long and I am almost a full-fledged senior citizen, not quite yet, but my boyfriend's of 20-plus years, we celebrated 20-plus 3 months yesterday, you know, he is fully sexual. He's 11 years older than me, so, you know, he would never, there's nothing unsexual about him, even at that age. And,
exactly.
You know, I think it's just so wonderful. And I'm not telling it to people to be jealous. I'm just telling it to people because this is what it is when you're with a straight man.
And I think that's important, Bonnie, because the longer you stay with somebody who's not straight, the more you need to be reminded what straight is because it can get really murky. It can get murky. People need to understand it is normal. It is normal for a man who's in love with you to want to have sex with you. It is normal for a man who ain't in love with you to want to have sex with you.
That is so true. I mean, and here's the sad part. Men want sex, and if they're not having it with you, they are having it somewhere else.
Thank you. They're having it with
something. Isn't that true?
That's true, and that's what a friend of mine had to tell me during the time when I was really going through the tortured thinking, you know, wrestling between denial and reality about my own marriage. I said, the problem is he doesn't want to have sex. He doesn't want to. She said, no, the problem is he doesn't want to have sex with you.
Right.
He wants to have said. It's just not with mm-hmm. you. And that was an eye-opener because they'll tell you, they'll try to talk you out of it. Oh, well, sex ain't everything. Oh, well, people are not having sex. Oh, well, most people, when they've been married as long as we have, only have sex, you know, less than we do. They try to justify it with you, but get them
exactly.
around the man that they really are attracted to, and you can't stop them. I watched my crippled ex-husband confined to a wheelchair and who did not try to spruce up, do anything when he was around me. When he got that call, that man put that motorized wheelchair in overdrive and went to that bathroom and did all he could to wash himself, to put cologne on. He didn't ask me for anything. Now, this is the same man that only moments before could not get out of bed because he was in so much pain, could not take mm-hmm. a bath, not do those things that would make you want to be around it. I really believe he would do those things so that I would not want him, that he would mm-hmm. do those things. It would keep a distance between him and I. But when he got that call,
he was up and at
it. Girlfriend that he kept trying to tell me was just a good friend. When he got that mm-hmm. call, he would do everything he could, sweat, do everything just to bathe, just to make himself smell good, and would put on an outfit I bought him to go take his wheelchair up on the petition we had built. We had a special, almost like when you're in a warehouse and how the floor goes up and mm-hmm. down. We had a special one of those levees put in our garage so that he did not need my help with going down to his car. He'd roll on that thing, mm-hmm. push the button, would lower him, and he would swerve and wrestle and do whatever he had to do to get out of that chair into his car to go meet this person. So
unbelievable,
to the
right?
Listener, please understand, he wants to have sex. It's just not with you. And why should you allow yourself to go through that kind of humiliation of him trying to give you 101 reasons not to have sex with you when you deserve to
mm-hmm.
have it with the person that you're married to? You deserve to.
And you know what? I remember exactly what you're saying, to be honest with you, even though it was many years ago. But when I had my gay husband, I could always tell when he was going to be with somebody because he could sit for days and not shave. I mean, he was always clean as far as showering and stuff. But, you know, he wouldn't get all spruced up or do his hair or anything. And then all of a sudden, he'd be saying, I'm going to the gym. You know, that's a code word now that I've learned, a gym. But he'd be, you know, putting on cologne. He'd be all washed and showered. He'd be wearing his, you know, tight-fitting shorts and looking beautiful, which is something he never did for me.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I could always tell when he was, and wasn't all the time, you know, but a couple times a week, you could tell. When somebody's going to the gym, they don't have to get all gorgeous stuff, you know, if it's just a gym visit, because they're always going to have to take a shower after that. So
that's
you
right.
know it. You know something's going on. And even though they lie to you, but certainly you have. Those are some of the signs. I always tell women, these are some red flags you're not seeing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
It's really sad because, you know, I feel bad. Like I had a woman who wrote to me today who was devastated, totally devastated, you know, that she found out, you know, a couple weeks ago about her husband. And her husband had really been in touch with me, asking me for advice and telling me his side of the story. And I'm always happy to work with gay men who want to be honest with their wives. And I always say it's going to be the hardest thing you ever have to do. But I try to work with them to be emotionally and financially responsible to their families and how to tell their wives in a way that will hurt the least, even though it's like a brick falling on your whole body. But,
yeah.
you know, I feel sorry in a way when they write to me and they say, well, you're the one who told my husband to tell me. You know, sometimes they're, well, nobody's ever happy to find this news out. But of course, I always extend my hand, and you know. But I see how many women just get hurt, and they hurt all the time on some level. And you know, as bad as it is, like I always say, it's better to know the truth than to have to live in somebody's lie.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel that. Eventually, they're going to say, "I'm glad I know the truth because living with his lie was even harder." Do you think so or no?
Well, it depends. It depends. I think eventually, if you want to be whole, you'll have to come to that point. But some people have difficulty with what I call emotional bag, the emotional bag lady. When it's like you can't let go. You cannot let go of the magical thinking. You cannot let go of the denial or the story that you tell yourself because of some part of your self-esteem being tied to the lie. It's almost like without the lie, then who am I or what am I? Because it makes me worse. It makes me defective that I didn't see this or that I stayed this long. So I'd rather believe the lie than to face the truth. And to see in my own eyes when I look in the mirror that I'm defective.
Well, it's true, though, but I was no different. I wanted to believe the lie. You know, believing a lie is so much easier than having to face the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, it is until it starts getting harder and harder. Because I think, tell me if you experience this, Bonnie, it's like the longer you're married to somebody gay and the longer you keep giving them a pass, the bolder they become in not treating you well.
Well, I mean, I just think there's so many complexities, and yet it seems like such a simple thing to just get up and go, right?
Yeah, it seems simple, but it's not.
Mm-mm. And women can't blame themselves for wanting to try to keep things together. I always tell women, it's not how fast you run. You can walk, you just have to move, you know, as long as you're moving ahead. And sometimes that move means emotional freedom first. Also, you know, always make sure that you have your ducks in order and that you just don't react, that you have to plan ahead. You have to be smart about it because when he sits there denying or telling you you're crazy, you know, you have to really be strong enough to say, I'm not crazy. I know this is happening. I turned my head long enough or, you know, I suspected it long enough and now I have to face it and deal with it.
Yeah. I know for me it was harder the second time around. It's like the first time around was hard, but the second time was even harder because I felt it was a compounded sense of betrayal and a compounded sense of, oh, my God, you were fooled twice. What does that mean? You got out and then you came back in and you brought your son back into this? It was harder the second time, and I think I wanted so much to be wrong because it was even a deeper blow to my self-esteem to see it unravel again. You know?
And were you thinking, how stupid could I be? This is the second time now?
Oh, but girl, what a few choice words. Like, are you doing crazy? What is wrong with you?
Well, because, you know, you want to believe when you come from a religious background, like you did, that God can heal anything and God can change everything, you know, if you have the faith. But, you know, that's certainly a possibility, but it doesn't happen all the time or any of the time. You know, nobody's changing their homosexuality.
Yeah.
I think that was a hard thing for you to accept, too, as somebody who believes in God.
It was very, very hard because it was one of those catch-22s. Because in my heart of hearts, I do believe God can do anything, you know, and that has not changed. But at the very same time, I do believe that a person's sexual orientation, it is what it is. I don't understand all the psychological or physical or genetic implications. I just know, you know, so many people have gone through so many struggles trying to pray the gay away, to the point there was even a show on the OWN Network with one reporters about pray the gay away. And I think since that show aired a couple of years ago, some of the very ones who said that they were praying it away have come to the conclusion it's an orientation. So, you know, I don't know if I'm going to even want to ask God about it when I see him. When I get to heaven, I think I'll be so happy to have gotten there. I don't think asking him about gay straight is going to be the first thing on my mind. But at the very same time, I cannot ignore the fact that this is bigger than how we simplify it in our day-to-day spiritualization or our day-to-day social, you know, social thinking or the moral thinking. It's bigger than that. It's not black and white. It's complex.
You think there's still a train of thought from, you know, the church you go to, that this is something that can be changed?
You know, I don't even put it in my mind to even try to figure it out, to try to figure out whether it's something a person can change or they can't. I can't even begin to figure it out because I'm not gay. But then when I apply that I am heterosexual and I apply how difficult it would be for me if the prevailing approved sexuality was homosexuality and I was heterosexual and I tried to pray my heterosexuality away, it would be next to impossible. So when I look at it from that standpoint, I don't try to infringe my beliefs or my confusion or my questions on somebody else. I take them for what they say. If this is their orientation, then that's what it is. And there seems to be more proof of it being orientation than proof that it's something you can pray away. Now, there might be some out there who would disagree with me. And if they do, that's fine. I'm not trying to change their minds about anything. I'm just saying my experience with it. And as I hear about, you know, every now and then I hear about different things concerning my ex, it would shock me to high heaven if he could or would change. Some people don't really want to. And then some people want to desperately and can't. So I can't judge it, Bonnie. That's one of those areas that I acknowledge it exists, but it would make me crazy trying to figure it out.
The way I look at it is this. I mean, why would somebody choose to be gay if they could make a choice to start with? You know, in a world where everybody is born equally and you come out of a womb, you know, I don't think it's a choice because I never felt it was a choice. I would not feel inclined to, I mean, and this is certainly not against homosexuality, but there's just nothing there for me. I'm not attracted to women. I can't imagine them as my sexual partner, and I certainly understand why they do, because they're gay.
Right.
But I will tell you one thing I've seen through the years is that it does run through families. I never see it isolated, and it may not be your immediate parents, but it will be an uncle or it will be a cousin. You know, you're not going to be alone in this. But it's just so sad. I'm even today, I don't know if you ever watched the show Nashville. Have you ever seen it?
In pieces.
I mean, I love that show. I mean, not because of the storyline right now, but very few shows do I have time for or do I even find an interest in. But that show is just draws you right in, I guess, because I'm into soap operas to some level. But it's very well done, and the talent is amazing. And I don't even like country music, but I love when they sing. But they have a very top, you know, burner story right now about a cowboy who's gay, and he just married a straight woman because he's so afraid that when people find out he's gay that he's going to lose his status, be rejected. Mm-hmm. And even though mm-hmm. people around him know he's gay, and they say, how can you do this to someone who's an innocent woman? And already they've shown her feeling that sexual rejection because, you know, when they've made love a couple times, you know, it just doesn't work for him. So right mm-hmm. away she's saying, what am I doing wrong? You know, how can I make it better for you? You know, she's blaming herself. And, you know, she's feeling more and more deteriorated. But he said, I love you and I want to marry you. And she's just so happy, so she married him.
Mm.
So it is the front story line right now on that show, Nashville, you know, a straight gay marriage and a man who went in to, and, you know, it's not that he doesn't care about her, but he cares more about himself and not destroying his reputation. So
yeah.
She's going to be one brokenhearted woman who's going to have to join our support network, I guess. I'm waiting for her letter.
Oh,
it probably won't
goodness.
Be long.
Yeah,
but it just shows you that even today, that not that much has changed as far as discrimination with gays. And I know that people tell me all the time, oh, it's so much better today. Well, guess what? It's not good enough. I wouldn't want to have to live it, worrying who's going to not talk to me, worrying if, you know, it's going to affect my family, my friends, if I tell the truth. You know, it's not that much better today. It's more open today than it was. But that doesn't mean that people are more accepting than they used to be.
That's true.
Do you find that?
I think the way you can really tell how accepting a person is when it comes knocking on their door and it's their son or their daughter or their grandchild. You know, that's when you have to really wrestle with whatever is unfinished or unresolved within yourself. You know?
Well, we said tonight we were going to talk about your next relationship after your gay husband, or
yeah.
after your gay husband, depending on how many relationships you've had, right?
Yes, that's right.
So some
there
women
is life
are just
after.
Yeah, life after my gay husband.
Yeah, oh, that sounds like a book burn.
Mm-hmm, doesn't it?
Oh,
life
God.
After my gay husband. But
oh,
anyway, so we were going to talk about how we can recognize good men, because so many of us gravitate towards bad men.
Yeah.
And I have this one friend, she says to me, well, you know, even a toxic relationship is better than no relationship. That's her attitude.
Ooh.
That's pretty.
No, when people
how
say
do you work
that.
With that?
Oh, God, people say that, I think to myself, then you must not have ever had a good one. Because if you've ever
right.
had a good
well,
one...
They're admitting it. They're saying, you're right, I haven't, but it's better than nothing.
Oh, gosh, I don't know whether to laugh or cry.
Where do you even begin on that one, right?
Oh, my
but
gosh.
We're going to assume that some women really want to meet a good man. So we're going to talk tonight. You know, we thought we would bring up some issues where how do you find a good man? What are you looking for? Because
yeah.
we certainly had enough bad men, so, you know, I'm not, you know, we've had destructive, toxic times of relationships. So now how do we find a good man, Suzette? You tell me.
I think it first starts in reevaluating what it is that you really want. And I don't mean I want him to be 6'8". I want him to have rippling biceps. I want him to have big hands because I heard men with little hands don't have much in the package area. You know, all these
I
things.
I never heard that.
Oh, man. I've heard that. Oh, don't date a man with little hands. Because that
no,
means
I heard
he
don't date a man with little feet. I heard don't date a man with little feet.
Oh, God, it must be little hands and feet. But, you know, we tell
although we could
ourselves.
Take a survey and let people know. Would Robert help us with that?
Oh goodness, he would probably look at me and say, don't even don't even go there.
Or maybe our women listeners could take a survey and let us know, and we can report the results for next month, right?
Yeah, take your tape measure, lady.
I've never heard the hand thing. I always heard the feet thing. That we go by their feet.
I heard the head thing, but I think it's really getting clear on that and making yourself dig deeper within your own self. Because I think even when we look at this thing about the bad boys, Bonnie, you know, I think the thing about bad boys that women find attractive is they think that he is a mover, he's a shaker. He is charismatic. He knows what he wants. You know, and being able to say this is what it is about that kind of guy that I find attractive. It's not that he is bad. It is this right here. So now how can I learn to recognize that in a good man? Because a good man can be a mover and a shaker as well. It's just that he has more character.
I'm going to give you my idea on the bad guy. Because I have some friends, and they just like a guy who's, you know, a bad guy. You know, he has to have some edge to him, or he has to be somebody who you really wouldn't want your sister to go out with, but you want to go out with him. So here's my theory on that. I think women who are in broken relationships are always looking to fix them. Because it's their nature, because they're lacking self-esteem to fix themselves, it's so much easier to try to fix somebody else than to change someone else. And I look at us as the ultimate fixer-uppers because we're always trying to fix up our own relationships, and we're always hoping these men are going to change if only we can show them how much we love them and that these are broken men and we're going to be the fixer-uppers and turn them into fully functional men. And that's because, you know, we don't feel secure enough within ourselves because, trust me, secure women don't need to find broken men. Broken women need to find broken men to try to fix them. But a woman who's strong within herself wouldn't want to take on that challenge. She would say, it's not worth it to me. What do I want a broken man for? Let somebody else fix them up. I need someone who's fully functional. But I do think that in many ways it's because of who we are that we choose these men. That we don't have the confidence in ourselves that somebody who's wonderful is going to want us. You know, we've been told so many times, well, nobody else is ever going to want you, that you have to prove to yourself and validate yourself from your former relationship. So you look for these guys who are needy and broken, and they do fall in need of you. I'm not going to say even in love with you. I'll say in need of you or need with you. And so you get tangled up, and that's how it starts, you know, because you're not in a good place yourself or you wouldn't be looking for that. So do you think that's possible?
I think it's very possible. I remember a time in my life when things were starting to clear up for me, and I started walking around this fogged-up state of misinformation because the people that I had seen in male-female relationships were always, you know, and even on TV, but I remember most of the shows would be like people in love. People in love couldn't eat. They couldn't sleep. You know, it was almost like when you became in love, you ceased to be able to think rationally. You ceased, and everybody would say, oh, girl, you in love. You're in love. So we grow up with this misinformation about what love really feels like and what the symptoms are really of being in love. And I think when my smoke started clearing was I looked at myself in the mirror one day, and I had to admit, if I looked at my history, 9 times out of 10, or we could say 9.99 times out of 10, if the guy that I met, I had an instant attraction for, 9 times out of 10, he was an unavailable man. And so I think part of learning how to recognize a good man is learning how to recognize what's broken in you. Because I thought, you know, oh, my God, you can't help who you fall for. That was what was modeled for me. Oh, my love makes you stupid. Love makes you camp out in front of a man's house. Love makes you sit by the phone for hours wanting it to ring. Love makes you, you know, all these different things that we say, oh, it's because you're in love. Love will make you stay with somebody who treats you badly. Uh-uh, that ain't love. That is brokenness. And so when I started understanding, look, Suzette, you broke. You done been married 2 times, and you don't know no more about men than you did when you first started. You're broken. You are a broken man magnet. You are an unavailable man magnet, and I am tired of being that. So am I going to change it because I see that in myself? Does that make me automatically able to change it? No. What I have to do is feed myself a healthy diet of truth. And so I put it I
started
thinking about what is true. What does a good man look like? What does he act like? Where does he hang out? What are his friends like? How does he treat a woman? You know, I started seeking to know the truth because I realized, wait a minute, my perception is broken. It has already been hotwired, singed, burnt out in the wrong direction. So I've got to find out some new information and will, and I know this sounds really weird, but I willed myself to start looking at men that I normally wouldn't look at and allowed my standards of how I wanted to be treated to lead as opposed to my knee-jerk, knee-buckling instant attraction. I forced myself to start holding myself to a higher standard because I deserved better than a man with cute eyes that treated me like crap.
Isn't that so true? That we fall for these guys who are, like you say, the bad guys or the exciting guys or the cute guys. And just because it's a physical, you know, attraction, it's not based on necessarily any reality other than that. And I think when I was growing up, I was always saying, oh, he's so good looking, as if that's going to make it or break it. But that's who I wanted, the good-looking ones. We all want Brad Pitt, right, or Billy Dee Williams, depending on, you know, where you're coming from, or both, either way, or fantasy about all of them. Although I've been watching Billy Dee on Dancing with the Stars, and I don't want him anymore. He's much too old now. He really is.
Oh my God.
He has two replaced hips. And he's going to be 80, so he's out of my radar even. But the thing is that, I mean, my boyfriend's 74, but that's a big difference in those 3 years from 74 to 77. But the truth is that, you know, I was always attracted to that type when I was younger. And I mean, I don't mean that much younger. I mean, even into my, you know, 40s and stuff, if I would see an exciting guy, that's who I wanted. You know, that's who I wanted to fix up. That's who I wanted to fall in love with me. That's who I wanted to do everything for so he could validate me and make and love me as much as I love him. That's crazy, right?
And if you see him as really attractive and he shows an interest in you, then I think the broken part of us women is we want to have the good person. It's almost like being attracted by association. If a man this fine or a man this whatever wants to be with us, then we must be okay. And so I think you're right. We go after these men in hopes that they're going to make us okay. They're going to validate us as being worthy or worth it.
You know, I say this, and I don't know how you feel about it, but now that you're engaged and, you know, moving on in your life, you know, and you have a man who is a man that you really love, you know, for all the right reasons, right? Here's what I say. I'm madly in love with my boyfriend after all these years, and we're not married. which I account for the reason I'm still in love with him. And I'm not embarrassed by that. Some women like the, you know, they like the everyday, you know, camaraderie. I like that, being in love and even feeling that passion. But I will tell you one thing. I know as a fact that if I ever found that he cheated on me, I could never stay with him.
Mm.
How about you?
Oh, God. That's a deep question there, Bonnie. That's a deep question.
Ooh, well, it's a matter for me. I just feel that if I'm good to someone and I love them and I'm providing for them in every way, you know, emotionally, physically, sexually, whatever the need is, and I'm there for that person, I just could never live with having to be intimate with somebody who cheated on me. Mm. Now, other people don't feel that way, but I do.
Yeah, I probably have been in that situation and didn't really know because I never caught them with anybody else. But, oh, my God, I know that's not a black and white issue. And I've learned enough in my life to never say never. So I'm not, I know I would be hurt deeply. I would be very hurt deeply by it. But I know of people who have actually worked through it. And please, listeners, please don't use this as a license to stay with somebody who is a serial cheater. please don't. You know, but
what's the number when it be? What's the number that makes it a serial? Is it 2, 5, 7? Is there a time period? Or, you know, number of years.
You know what? I think it's a compulsion that they have not gained mastery over. You know, it's serial. You know what? I would think it's serial if it happens more than once, because there's something in you that whenever you don't get a certain need met, that gives yourself permission to cheat on me, and I have a problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, maybe first time, okay. I'm not saying that it would be easy, but first time mistake, okay, you might can play the mistake card. But if the same set of circumstances happens again, would you do the very same thing?
Well, they're not going to tell you the truth.
Yeah. And so I think
my
that's
feeling
what
is this.
It has to change.
Yeah, here's the whole thing. Remember how we said that men want sex, right? Okay.
Yep.
I can understand that if a man is with a woman who won't have it or who, you know, can't have it or won't have it, you know, men have needs. So I could see it there. But if you're a loving, caring wife and a guy is still not loyal to you, and I'm not telling other women, I'm just telling you for me, I couldn't live with
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could never feel the same about being intimate with him knowing that he's been with somebody else.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes also to a standard that a person would have in choosing what would be the good man for them. The good
mm-hmm.
man for you is a person who's not going to cheat on you. That's the good man for you. So I think some people are looking at who they can be with, who can they feel comfortable, can just feel free to be who they are, that being with this person just brings out the best in them. They just enjoy even just hanging out with this person. Even if they're not doing anything but washing dishes or whatever, that you just enjoy being with this person. I think cultivating what that looks like for you is a very important piece of finding a good man. So there are many good men out here, but every good man is not for you. So getting what it is that you know you need in order to thrive, what you need in order to feel alive, to feel good in that relationship, to feel like you matter to this person. Those are the qualities that should lead you in choosing your partner. Not necessarily because he bought you flowers and paid for them.
Right. I'm just saying what I could live with and what I couldn't live with.
Yeah.
I just feel that's the breaking point for me. I mean, I can put up with people's moods and their problems and, you know, having to give them more emotional support than maybe, you know, I want to give or, you know, have certain, you know, nothing is perfect in life, but I'd like to be as close to perfect as possible. But for me, the breaking point is, you know, infidelity. I just couldn't live with it. But for other people, it's other stuff. You know, some people don't care about that, you know, as long as they're financially secure. Or they'll say, well, everybody can make a mistake. And they can. I just don't want it to be that one. I would be too devastated.
I think my standard would be a man who lies. And I think I need to clarify. I think all of us at some time in our lives have told a little white lie. So I don't mean something like that. You know, a guy, you might see your husband downstairs and you know he's on a diet. And you say, well, you eat that piece of cake. And you'll say, oh, that's a little white lie. That's not the kind that kills a marriage or wounds a family. Okay.
No, I don't think that would do it for me. That would be fine. I could live with that since I do that all the time myself. That definitely would be fine with me. I could live with that lie.
But the deeper lie of the lie of whether you're gay or straight, the lie
That's a big lie.
That's a big lie. When I say I can't live with a man alive, I mean I cannot live with somebody who is going to willfully deceive me about matters that are my life or death.
Uh-huh.
So that means my emotional life or death, my physical life or death, my spiritual life or death. You know, that's the kind of lawyer I cannot. That's my standard. That would make me that devastating kind of liar. The kind of stuff that you wait a minute, you put me in jeopardy emotionally, sexually, spiritually. You put me in jeopardy and you lie knowing this could hurt.
Three lies and you're out, right?
Honey, no, I ain't no three. I have a very short, my fear of a lie is about like yours is on a cheer. Because it's like when you've been deceived two times by a gay man. So my fuse is very short when it comes to that kind of lie. You know, that kind of lie, no, because I think it speaks to character. My thing is to character. It speaks to character and it speaks to your value of me. How can you say you value me? How can you say you love me and are willing to sacrifice me like Joan of Arc at the stake?
But don't you feel that infidelity is part of a lie too, Suzette?
I do feel like it's part of a lie, but I guess the thing about it, my gut would be, what about the man that does that and comes back in the house and tells his wife, I'm so sorry. I can't lie to you. I did this.
Okay.
On his own accord and says, you know what? I would leave me. And I know I'm not asking you to stay with me, but I care too much about you than to get in this bed with you, knowing that the reason I got home late was because me and my secretary had a compromising moment. You know, a person like that is different than a person who is a chronic or a serial cheater that has that value system in them that can rationalize cheating on you. you know, because I remember having a discussion with some girlfriends of mine who were talking about when Chris Brown had that battery charge against Rihanna, where he had pummeled her face, actually. And we were talking about it, and they were talking about, well, I heard she put her hands on him first. Or, well, I heard she's not a very nice person. Or I heard she, you know, and I'm like, so you're saying that because she was back, that gave him the right to do that to her? And we argued back and forth. Suzette, no, everybody's not like you. Sometimes you create situations that make a person do that. You know, if she talking all this stuff in his face, I would hit her too. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm scared. I said, because if you can say that a woman can do something that would make it okay for a man to do to her what that man did, then I feel very fearful for the two of you. Because if he can give you a legitimate reason for going upside your head, you're going to sit in the corner and say, I shouldn't have done that, when you should be tapping your back and trying to get out. So it really is, I think it comes down to the person's real belief system, because there are some men that don't think cheating is wrong. They'll tell you they're sorry because they don't want to lose you, but really in their heart of hearts, they don't think cheating is wrong. So that's a character thing. But then to another man, he might have had a weak moment, and he really doesn't believe cheating is a good thing. He hates the fact that he cheated. He hates it. He doesn't know where it came from, and he cannot stand it, whether you stay with him or not. He is determined he is going to change it because it goes against everything he believes. And that's a different man. And I can't treat both men the same way.
I would. It wouldn't matter to me. You know, but I'm not saying that my answer is the right answer. I just feel I can't live with it. Or I may be able to live with it, but I don't want him touching me again. So then what's the point in staying married?
Well, that's true. That's true.
But that's me. You know, once again, everybody has different, you know.
Yeah, I was getting ready to say that. I think everybody, that the lesson here is for everybody to figure out what their deal breaker is and learn to recognize the person that you don't want to get with a person that's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. You want to be able to recognize the kind of man who has the kind of heart and value for what you bring to the relationship and who you are as a woman, to not do that.
That's how I feel. But once again, some women feel differently. You know, I've worked with women who want to forgive their husbands. My ego isn't strong enough for that. And that may be my issue. I would always feel that every time he walked out the door or he was 5 minutes late, you know, would bring me all the way back to being married to my gay husband. And I'm not saying that's the way why I feel like this. I would have felt like this before my gay husband, you know, when I was cheated on, which happened to me in a previous marriage that I had. And I was just unable to, but I was young then, so I guess I was able to get past it. But I was always, you know, when he was 5 minutes late, checking his pockets and wondering, you know, this is so many years ago, we didn't have computers or any modern technology. But I would always be waiting by the door, waiting and thinking, well, maybe he's here, maybe he's with this one or that one. So it is part of my own insecurity. But I do see people work through it, like you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, but not that often will things ever be the same. I don't think people forget.
And then one thing's for sure, when it comes to gay husbands or gay wives, trying to work through a situation like that is really...
You have no chance at all.
You don't have a chance, because that person might be sorry they hurt you, but if they can't help who they are attracted to, they're going to do it over and over and over and over again, or get angry with you because they want to. Now they're fussing at you, kicking the dog, slamming the doors. because that something inside of them wants to be in a relationship, and they feel like they're on lockdown, and so they're angry with everybody. So you can't win. The way you're not going to have him. You know, you're not going to have him. And I think a lot of women need to understand that just because he's contrite or he might cry or tell you how sorry he is, how much you and the children mean so much to him, that doesn't mean a leopard might be sorry, but he can't change his spots.
Right. That's true. And a lot of these guys are very manipulative. You know, they'll do everything to put the blame on you, that the failure of the marriage is your fault. They wouldn't be doing this if it weren't for you. You know, they wouldn't act like this if it weren't for you. You know, they'll try every manipulative thing that they can try to make you believe it's your fault and not theirs. And I think sometimes we just feel that maybe it is our fault and maybe we should try a little harder.
And I think we have to be very careful. I think we have to be very careful, even if the man is very apologetic. We have to be careful not to sneak into over-stimulated maternal instinct, because he can say he's sorry, and a lot of women end up turning into a mother that says, he's sorry, so I got to take care of him now emotionally because he's so devastated, so I got to put my feelings on the back burner because he's the most important, because he's falling apart. He's not your son or your daughter. He's your husband. And I think the piece that becomes missing is you still need to bring him to a standard of accountability. Don't just get sidetracked by him being sorry and shedding tears, because as many people that are sorry and shedding tears that still are getting busy with somebody else. But there has to be a standard that you don't slink into becoming his mama and giving him
a
pass.
I think a lot of women do that.
Yeah, we do. Oh, boogie, boogie, boogie. Oh, he was so old. You should have seen him. He was holding that little flower in his hand, just like a little boy, and saying, baby, don't leave me. Baby, don't leave me. Oh, girl, it melted my heart. I got to be strong for him. You know, I got to help him. You know, I got to pray for him. You know, you start going into that stuff instead of saying, yeah, baby, here's a tissue. But what are we going to, how am I going to hold you accountable not to hurt me again? Because I can say, you know what, baby, cry as we pack your clothes so you can leave. I'll cry with you while we're packing your clothes for you to leave. You know what I'm saying? Because
that's
your
what you're
going
to need to do.
He's your husband all the time. He's your wife all the time. And that does not change just because they're sorry and they cry real hard and they look real pitiful.
It's so true. It's so true what you're saying. And I think a lot of women get sucked into that.
Yep.
Because they love their husbands. You know, it's like I tell women, when I tell you the words, he's gay, those are the two worst words I could ever tell you, because that means your marriage is over. And as much as women don't want to hear that, those two words, he's gay, you know, and then, you know, like they'll write me, they say, do you think he's gay? And I say, yes, he's gay. Then they write back and they say, well, I really wasn't ready to hear that. Okay, well, then why are you writing to me? Do you want me to tell you, no, he's not gay? Because I'm not doing that. You know, I don't have time to make you waste more years. You know, it's bad enough as it is that you have to go through this. But you don't have to go through it an extra 5 years looking for the answers that you want to hear when they're not true. So, you know, I know it's a horrible thing to tell people because they don't want to know the truth. But you know what? If you could have stayed, you would have stayed in your marriage, you would have really lost who you were altogether. Don't you think so?
Bonnie, if I had stayed in my marriage, I think you would have been hearing about my funeral by now. Because it's not so much the physical death of it, but who knows, I might have gotten such a twist, I might have taken my own life, I don't know. But just how it just drained the very light and life out of my face. The way it just literally, that it really was stealing the very life out of me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that happens to everyone.
I would have probably either been dead physically or dead emotionally to the point that I was almost like at a viable 55, I'm acting more like I'm 90.
Yeah, I mean, I was that way too. I had to get out. There's no way I could stay in there and survive mentally, emotionally, physically.
Couldn't
do it.
Because,
you know, many of us become suicidal. That's how I felt. You know, I didn't have a will to live anymore. It was, beaten down out of me. And not through any kind of physical touching or at all. It was all emotional kinds of abuse. And that's very dangerous, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women think because their bruises don't show on the outside that they're okay because they're all on the inside.
Mm.
But just because the bruises don't show doesn't mean that they're not there. They're just there differently. Wouldn't you say so?
That was very well said. That's so true, Dawn. So true.
Yeah, well,
so true.
You know, and I'm embarrassed to tell you that when I was married, I used to wish my husband would hit me. Like, I would agitate him sometimes, just hoping that I would agitate him enough, because he had a very bad temper, that he would get so angry and just hit me. And that's how pathetic I was, because I wanted people to believe me what he was doing to me. You know, I wanted them to see that I was so hurt. And they couldn't see the inside scarring, but I thought if he would hit me, at least they could see it on the outside and believe me. And that's really, I've heard that story from a lot of women. I wish he would have hit me so people could see that he really hurt me. But that's pretty pathetic to live your life like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's sad. And I say this often, I'm so glad that there are resources out there for people now, that you're a resource. The show is a resource. Because the thing about it is that person, you can't stay in denial as long as you keep getting hit with the truth. Denial needs to stay in isolation. In order to stay in a state of denial, you have to remain in isolation with whatever that prevailing thought is. But even if a person doesn't make a change right now, by virtue that they tune into your radio show, or they listen to the archive, follow your website, or they bought a book, they have brought truth into their lives that at some point, if they keep right on being exposed to truth, they will have to give the lie up. They will have to.
And I feel the same way. That's why when I hear back from women and they say, look, I didn't want to talk to you, deal with it, accept it when you told it to me, you know, I tried to put it together, put it back in place, do whatever I had to do to make it work, but now I see it just can't work. You were right. Well, I don't get any satisfaction out of women telling me I was right. I know I'm right. I don't want you suffering more than you need to suffer. It's not for me. It's for you. Now, no woman should have to live one more day in this kind of emotional distress and pain when they don't have to.
You don't have
to. That's what we're here for, to give them the strength.
And that's the thing. They don't have to. And it's almost like if you can just, the person who's struggling, if you can just continue to reach out for the truth, after a while you'll get enough strength to leave. And I tell you this, and I know Bonnie can concur, but you think, if I leave this man, who's going to want me? Who's going to want a woman who stayed married to somebody who treated her this bad? Who's going to want a woman who has let herself go because of what she's gone through? Who's going to want a woman with all these issues that this man has convinced me that I have? Well, let me tell you something. I have met a man in my life, in my 50s, that has been more than any man I've ever met in my life. And to think, if I had never left the situation I was in, I would be robbing myself of this man who genuinely loves me. I mean, genuinely loves me. So all I say is don't rob yourself. Don't rob yourself.
And I think even more so than that, not worrying about your next step, look how much time you took to rebuild your own self first. And you had to learn to love yourself before you could truly love someone else, right?
Yeah, you have to learn that the things that you've been taught about yourself are so bad. When you look at it in the light, find
mm-hmm.
out, no, this is what makes me unique. Because what's hamburger to one person is steak to another. And the very things that my gay husband could not stand about me, this man that I'm about to marry in December loves about me. So you learn, but he could not even, he would even recognize it if I had not found the strength to be me. And
mm-hmm.
I think that's a vital step. Even before you get to finding a good man, you got to become a good woman first.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of us think we're good women just because we know how to cook, or we know how to take care of children, or we can hold down
a
job.
Man.
Yeah.
Or take care of
there's more to that.
Uh-huh.
There's more to being a good woman than that. A good woman is good to herself.
Uh-huh. And that's not being selfish. That's being self-loving, which every woman needs to be.
That's being healthy.
You'll never love a man in a healthy way if you can't love yourself first.
And,
right?
you'll never show up. You'll never show up as you. So
mm-hmm.
the right man can recognize you if you don't learn how to
mm-hmm.
love yourself first. Because you're going to try to hide that part of you.
That's right. So anyway, we're going to end tonight because we're running over, but we always have so much to say, Suzette.
Yeah.
And I really thank you so much, and I hope people who love listening to you will call you when they need coaching. You can find Suzette on my cover page at gayhusbands.com under my resources for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
She is just wonderful, soothing. She really brings you back to focus on what you need to do to find your road to happiness. And Suzette, tell them about your book so they can also learn to buy that.
Oh, indeed. If you also come to that same website, you'll see my book, The Sound of My Life. And it really is my story from living
mm-hmm.
in the background, from losing the sound of my own voice, because when you lose the sound of your own voice, you lose who you are. And for many of you out there that are living in situations with men who can't love you or women that can't love you, the more you stay in it, you lose the sound of your own voice, and therefore you lose who you are. And it's my story about losing who I was and finding
mm-hmm.
myself again, knowing that my dreams really do matter. And I'm so happy also to add to it a second book that's going to launch in the next 2 to 3 weeks, called The Sound of My Soul, which is basically a walk backward from my life to
mm-hmm.
the soul behind it. And I go even deeper into those intricate parts of my heart that had to be recovered and reclaimed. And I'm proud of the first book, but even more proud of the second one, because I go even deeper, and there's such wealth in both books. I'm so happy to be able to present my quote-unquote sound series.
Wonderful. Maybe the next one could be The Sound of My Heart.
Ooh. Ooh.
You know, that could be like after you get married again, you know, or get married to Robert, you can write about The Sound of My Heart.
The sound continues.
mm-hmm. Yep, that's the next sound, how to learn to love yourself so that you can find the right person to love again. How's that?
Oh, that's wonderful. That is
I know.
Wonderful.
I just keep giving you more ideas to keep yourself even busier, right? Like, leave me alone already, Bonnie. Well, Suzette, I appreciate you so much, and you know I love you, and you inspire me every time I talk to you. And I know that you inspire our listeners, so we'll be waiting for next month to be back again. And we always have something to say. I think that's what we should call our show. We always have something to say. How's that? Oh, and even if it's not what we quite plan, we still have other things to say. And that's what counts, right?
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
All right, so to all our listeners, love to all of you. And I'll be back here next week. And in 2 weeks, I have a really interesting speaker from the Straight Spouse Network who has produced a wonderful film showing how straight, you know, wives and husbands feel when they have to deal with their spouse being gay. So he'll be our guest in 2 weeks. I'm hoping next week we're going to have Mike from LinkedIn, from our private detective agency, who's always there to give us great advice. So on behalf of Suzette and me, I want to wish you a wonderful, happy week. Suzette, I really love you. Thank you for being my co-host this every month and making a difference in people's lives.
Thank you for having me, Bonnie. Thank you so much.
Yep. All right, so we'll both say goodnight to all our listeners and goodnight to you, Suzette.
Good night, listeners. Good night, Bonnie. Love you.
Good night, Suzette. Good night, listeners. Bye-bye.